What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. When Kaylin was 9 years old, she was attacked by a family dog. The attack was so awful that it tore open her mouth, lip, opposing cheek, and part of her eye. She was confronted with hundreds of stitches and facial reconstruction. After the incident, Kaylin learned she had a new set of challenges to face. It was the first time she experienced bullying, taunting, and being the object of ridicule because of the scars on her face. Feeling very alone, with no one else to turn to, she turned to the one thing that gave her peace and happiness, music. Kaylin joins this edition of 411 Teen to share her story. Kaylin, welcome to 411 Teen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, yours is truly an amazing story. Where did you get your spirit?
Well, as a young girl, I always loved to sing, always loved to dance and act, and I used to put on little shows and get dressed up for my parents, of course, in the living room, and I just always had it in me to kind of follow my dreams and follow my passion, and even though, you know, I was attacked by a dog and it was a really tragic event, I still found my love for music and acting and performing.
Well, if you don't mind, share your story. Tell us about the attack and what happened.
Yeah, so I was visiting my grandparents, and I'd gotten my face painted like a green butterfly at the fair, and we'd come back to the house, and everyone was sitting in the living room, and I was in another room doing a puzzle, and when I came back into the living room, a dog that actually used to be mine, it was a black lab, was laying on the ground, and I went down to go pet him while he was sleeping, and he woke up, and he was startled, because my face was painted, and he just, next thing I know, he was on top of me and, you know, shaking me around like a rag doll, and, you know, everyone, my sister, my mom, and my grandparents were there, and my grandpa Bill was trying to pry the dog off of me, and it was just a horrendous scene, and my mom, being a critical care nurse, took me up and threw me over her shoulder, and we hopped in the car right away, and she rushed me to the hospital. And when we got there, I was immediately rushed to a room, and they stuck an IV in me, and next thing you know, I was, you know, on a bed, undergoing facial reconstruction, and I was on life support. And so I was in the hospital for about 3 days, and what it ended up happening was he ripped off the right half of my lip almost completely. It was hanging on by a little piece of tissue. So I was holding it with my right hand, and the left side of my eye was split open all the way down to my cheekbone, exposing my cheekbone. And I just, you know, I thank God every single day for letting me live, because that dog was just so, he was so close to my actual eye, or, you know, my throat, or something that would have been a lot more tragic. But luckily, I got lucky, and I had an amazing doctor, and he stitched me right up, and I've been healing for a long time now. I'm 18, so this all happened when I was 9, and yeah, so that's the event that took place, and I was out of school for a few weeks, and during those few weeks, I was just trying to heal before going back to see my friend, and I put up a camera in my house, and I started making singing videos of myself because I couldn't run anymore. Soccer was my sport back then, and running, I hurt because my face had stitches in it and was just really hard. So I thought I found something stationary that I could do that I loved, and singing was it. So I sat there for 3 weeks and just made videos of myself singing, and that was the day that I realized that singing and performing was going to be something that I depended on to be my strength and to be my friend.
Well, you were so young, and kids can be very cruel. What a journey you must have traveled. I guess that every aspect of your life at that time would be a challenge. What impact did this attack have on your family?
I think it was actually harder on my family than it was on me because, you know, they had to witness it from, you know, the outside. And, you know, my mom still, it'll make her cry if I start talking about it. And, you know, my parents, my mom and my dad had to go to my guidance counselors at school and talk to them, tell them to let my friends know what had happened so that when I came back, it would kind of ease the blow of, you know, surprise. But unfortunately, when I did come back, I was bullied for a little bit. People around the school started calling me Scarface and stuff behind my back. And as I grew up, though, the name calling started to go away, but I started to realize that I could bully myself, and that was something that I faced as I was growing older. You know, as a teenage girl, it's natural to be hard on yourself, and having scars on my face just made it 10 times worse.
What about the issue of it being a family pet? I mean, I would think that alone would be difficult because a pet is a part of the family, and here you have this pet reacting in such a violent, awful way.
Yeah, well, I have my own chocolate lab right now.
Okay.
To me, his name is Mater. And, you know, something like that you would think would really make me scared to have dogs, to be around dogs. But I actually had my dog that I have now, I had him as a puppy back home when it all happened. And, you know, my parents were debating on giving him away and stuff. And I was like, I told him no because I knew that it wasn't necessarily the dog's fault. I basically tamed it and I scared him. And so I don't blame dogs for what happened at all. I love dogs, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think it was just a horrible incident. I think the dog that did attack me, he was kind of raised outside with another dog and they were like safe fight and stuff. And so growing up, my parents never let me play, you know, tug of war with my dog or do anything that would kind of cause him to be aggressive. And I think that, like, a dog's behavior really depends on how they're raised.
Yeah.
And so I'm now the spokesperson for a program called Dog on Safe that teaches dog bite prevention because it's so crazy how much more common it has gotten over the past few years. And not just with pit bulls, you know, it can happen with any dog, you know, mine with a lab, which is not really expected.
But
we try to teach people to, they have a method called be a tree, and basically then you feel like a dog is kind of aggressive towards you, just to stand still and don't show them that you're going to be any harm for them.
Well, your injuries were such that they could not be hidden. So everywhere you went, people could see you. How did you cope with that? How did you integrate that into your daily lives? Because I'm sure reactions were difficult to deal with, in addition to the bullying that you said you experienced somewhat.
Yeah. So being 9 years old, I was a little spunky person with a strong personality. And I was one of those people that, like, you know, if you broke an arm or sprained an ankle, you wanted to show all your friends your cast. And so it was kind of that same situation when I was younger. You know, I would walk into places and restaurants and be like, ooh, look what happened to me, just, you know, naive and not really knowing what was going through their minds. But as I started to grow up and even now, you know, being a teenager and seeing so much influence on social media about, you know, looking perfect and, you know, wearing tons of makeup to cover up scars or acne and stuff like that. And it's just, I mean, every single day I just try to look in the mirror and tell myself that I'm beautiful just the way that I am and we're all unique and different. And I have a lot of friends that support me and will, you know, remind me that, wow, you know, you heal, your scars have healed so well, and I think that they make you who you are. And so I take that every single day as a compliment. I try to tell myself that, you know, my scars are unique, and they make me who I am, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be like everybody else, and so that's okay.
Do you, have you suffered any physical limitations or have any adaptations that are required at this point?
No, I really count on my music to really help me adapt to the feeling of unconfidence.
Mm-hmm.
And music has been around for me for a long time, but until the attack, it wasn't really in my life as much as it is now. And so I write from personal experiences, and I try to inspire others with my music to overcome whatever it is they might be going through. Because, you know, even bullying and stuff, you know, you might not have physical scars, but bullying leaves emotional scars, mm-hmm. and people have to deal with that. And so I've actually been touring around the U.S. since I was 14, on an anti-bullying tour known as the Royal Tour, and also the One Voice Project. And what we do is we go city to city, state to state, and all these different schools, and talk to the kids about bullying and try to use our music to get the message out there.
Oh, have you been to Tallahassee? Maybe you could come here.
I do need to come to Florida. That's
mm-hmm.
the only place I've gone. I've been to Las Vegas and San Antonio and Dallas, but I've not gone to Tallahassee.
Well, we will have to do something about that.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Was it easier, or did I hear you say it was easier to cope in high school than it was when you were younger? So you found your high school years easier?
Yeah, I did find my high school years easier. I think the hardest years for me were probably the middle school era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're just trying to find out who you are, what you want to be, and in middle school, people, you know, kids are just really harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And something, again, that I really face and that I try to prevent in other schools is self-bullying and self-harm because, you know, sometimes you're your own worst enemy. And as I was in middle school, that was kind of my problem. You know,
mm-hmm.
people weren't necessarily bullying me, but if they didn't like me, I took it personally and I blamed it on my scars, and that was me bullying myself. That wasn't them. And so that's something that I try to show people in schools is that...
I asked you to hold your thoughts. We need to take a quick break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm talking with Kaylin Robertson out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Kaylin has always had a love of music since she could talk. A personal and life-altering trial took her on a journey which led to music becoming her future. She shares the message of hope, love, and acceptance to teens and children on their own personal journey. Kaylin, I had to interrupt you before we went on break. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, I was saying that something that I try to preach in these schools is that, you know, someone who is confident in their own skin, someone who learns to really love themselves for who they are, doesn't get bullied, and it's because they don't let the things that other people say about them get to them. And that was something that I didn't realize. And I did bully myself more than other people bullied me.
Well, how did you get to the point that you were comfortable with self, that you were very confident with yourself, and you really were able to kind of shrug that bullying or ridicule off and just do your thing? I mean, because that's a big secret. That's a big key to your being able to cope and function.
Yeah. Well, I always try to encourage people to find a passion, and that was something that I did immediately was I found music as my passion. And something that has really, really helped me over the past few years was being able to share my story with other people and see how it improves their lives has really helped me gain confidence in myself. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm getting up in front of 1,500 kids in a middle school, and I used to be that age. I used to be in their shoes, and to be able to get up and share my story and just, you know, see how much it emotionally affects them in a good way is really inspiring, not only to them, but it also inspires me to keep doing what I do and to keep visiting children and talking to them. And not only children, but even adults have come up to me and just been like, you know, your songs and stuff really relate to me, and they've helped me get through so many different things. And so that's really what's helped me gain my confidence.
Share with us just what your treatment and reconstruction involved. How many operations did you have, so people can have a feel for just how devastating this was?
So I was in surgery, and they put me on life support right away, and I had over 200 stitches in my face, and the doctor actually came out and said that he lost count of how many stitches after 200. So we don't know the definite number. We just know that it was more than 200. And after that, you know, they offered more more surgeries, like plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. But not only did I not want to go through another surgery, I also, over time, I learned that, you know, these scars make me who I am, and I don't really want to try to hide them. And even when I'm taking pictures, like professional pictures for my websites or videos or CDs, you know, my parents have always taught me, you know, don't hide who you are. And so they tell them, you know, don't edit her scars. And so the same thing happened when they asked me if I wanted to go through another surgery to further hide them. I told them no.
Well, it sounds like you have a great handle on things, and you have a very positive attitude. You mention and talk about feeling so alone when you were going through this surgery, and you were laying there in the bed, and, you know, there'd be long times between people coming to visit. What role did music play at that point?
My family supported me, and my friends have always supported me. And even when I felt alone, even when I was alone, music, again, was my friend. Mm-hmm. And gave me confidence. And so even today, if I feel alone in something, I write a song about it or tell somebody about it, and it helps me out, and it makes you feel not alone. Because, I mean, it's important to realize that none of us are alone. No matter what you're going through, there's someone that you can talk to or something that you can do to cope with it. And for me, it's finding a passion, finding my love for music, and sharing that with other people.
So your music was therapeutic, is what I hear you saying.
Yeah.
Okay. And you, in your music, you could tell a story, or you could escape, or what purpose would that music serve?
Yeah, so, I mean, I write from personal experiences, and when I was younger, it was more about, my songs were more about overcoming tragedy and stuff like that, and as I've grown older, I write about anything now, mm-hmm. Whether or not it be breakups or just loving life, and I really try to pull from my personal stories, because if I can relate to a song that I write, then my audience is going to be able to relate to it, enjoy it just as much as I do. And so that's something that I really try to do, is write from personal experiences, because someone else out there, I know for a fact, has gone through those same emotions. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see how my music affects other people. And I've actually had the pleasure to be visiting hospitals now. I visited the Levine Children's Hospital, the Jeff Gordon Children's Hospital, and most recently I visited St. Jude. And that was amazing. And I've gotten to play for some kids, and just to see how me coming into their room where they can't, you know, they're not allowed to go out, mm-hmm. How much it puts a smile on their face when I just come in and play music for them. And I'm actually now, I'm part of the Thank You Music Gives program, which is launching in August. So I'm really excited about that.
So your reception was very positive, and the kids just enjoyed and could connect with you.
Yes.
What about family? And I asked you this for those who may be listening, for parents who may be listening, who have a child who may have experienced something similar or have some tragedy that they have to cope with. What types of things can the family and can parents do to help you or to help their child through this difficult time?
I mean, from personal experience, mm-hmm. it's extremely important for families to stick together when a child is in time of need. You know, there's such horrible cases sometimes where tragedies like this can tear families apart, but it's important to get over differences and stuff like that and to really just come together, support each other, and be there for your child or your loved one. And that's something that my parents did, and they've just been so supportive for me, and they've done all they can to help me pursue my passion and support me in that way as well.
What attitude did you encounter amongst your community? They talk about it takes a village. What was your village like?
My village at first, it was pretty big, you know, right after the dog attack happened. I had a lot of friends who sent me cards. My classmates, they all sent me cards. And it just made me feel loved and welcome to come back to school. And my village has just been growing bigger and bigger and bigger the more that I share my story and inspire others. And nowadays, you know, people from these schools that I sing at, they even come to me on Instagram or Facebook or anything. And they message me and with their personal life problems, and I'm just someone that they feel like they can come to talk. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing to see how big my village has grown. But it needs to keep growing. If you're listening, you need to go follow my music. Go visit my website, www.kaylinroberson.com. And you'll find all my new music that is coming out starting next month.
Okay. Yeah, and you have some special accolades that are attributed to you. I know that you were named the North American County Music Association International Female Vocalist of the Year, right?
Yes, I was. That was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I want to say that was in 2015.
Okay.
I was the North American Country Music Association's Female Vocalist of the Year for either 2015, 2016. I can't quite remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, there's a bar down here in Raleigh called Deep South the Bar, and it's kind of a big place. And Deep South used to be a record label, and I was their youngest open mic night winner, and I got to work with them to do my first EP.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I did that when I was, I want to say I was either 14 or 15.
So may I gather that music is going to be your thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna keep trying to make music, you know, my life career. The goal is to just, even if I'm not some big, famous pop star, that's not necessarily what mm-hmm. I want. I just want to be able to use my music for the good in the community and, of course, to be able to make a living off of doing something that I love.
So tell me about you. Where are you now? I mean, are you in school? You're out of school? You're just pursuing your music? What's happening?
So right now, I am still in school. I do online school through a program called North Carolina Virtual Public School.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to be a senior next year because I went homeschooled sophomore year and felt a little behind. So I've got another year of high school left.
Mm-hmm.
But then music-wise, because I do online school, it gives me free time to travel. and do what I love most, which is music. And so I've been going to Nashville about once a month and just trying to write and do writing rounds in Nashville and get to connect with some really amazing musicians out there.
When you look back and think about, you know, the challenges and the changes that you've had to endure, what would you identify as your biggest challenges and why?
My biggest challenge is to face defeat. Because as a musician, it's so hard not to feel defeated. The industry is just so competitive. And everyone's trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And music is something that you either love and you have the drive for it or you don't. And I definitely have the drive to do what I love. But it can be really hard and feel really discouraging when there's so many other people reaching success and you're just trying to push at it, trying to get somewhere. And sometimes it's just really hard, you know. I have about 2 to 3 gigs each week just trying to make money so that I can pay for recording and flights. And not only, like, defeat in my career, but I also sometimes feel defeat emotionally. You know, it's tiring to travel a bunch. Coming up, I might be flying to L.A. for a day and come back and then do a wedding.
Oh.
So it's really, really tiring. But music is what I love, and it's what I want to do for the rest of my life. So that's what keeps me going at it.
So what is inspiring? I mean, I know because you love it, and that is in itself is enough to make you keep going. But what else do you find that inspires you to keep meeting that challenge when you're tired, when you're overwhelmed?
My parents really push me to be the best that I can be, and I mean, my friends, they support me, and that really inspires me. But also to be able to, again, see my music affect other people's lives really inspires me, especially when, you know, I have performances every weekend and I get to see how much fun the people are having that I'm playing for. It brings me a lot of joy and inspiration to keep doing what I love and keep making people happy with my music.
Now, I know that you give motivational speeches and concerts. You've mentioned to a number of organizations and public schools. How, if someone wants to contact you, would you share again your website and how they contact you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you guys could just go to www.kaylinroberson.com, K-A-Y-L-I-N Roberson. You guys can find all of my social media on there, which you can contact me on. And it also has my email. And it also has a schedule on it for my performance dates if you are near me and want to come check us out. And I do solo gigs, and I also have a band that I love, absolutely love them. They're so talented, and we'd love to come perform, and I'd love to come talk for anything that any of you guys need.
Okay, so you're open to coming and talking. So they just need to contact you and get on your schedule and see if that works.
Absolutely. Just contact me and put me on your schedule, and I'll be there.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm sure, you know, with the new year coming in the fall, that maybe they will be able to incorporate you into their schedule.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
As far as coping and outside intervention, did you need or require any outside or additional counseling or therapy to manage your attack and manage your reconstruction?
So I actually did not ever go to therapy. I think my parents thought about it, but I didn't go to therapy. No, but my mom, actually, she goes to therapy still sometimes over it.
Well, it's a really traumatic event. I'm amazed that you are able to cope so well, and that's why I keep asking, because I think those that are listening and can hear you may be inspired just by listening to what you have to say and to how you handled it. So that's why I keep asking, any suggestions? What can they do? What would you say?
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, just keep following your dream and keep, as a family, stay together with your kids and support them. My family has been so supportive of me, and I don't think I would be anywhere if they didn't support my music. And So that's the biggest thing, is for families to support each other. And if families can't do it, you know, friends need to support each other, too.
And school. So you found school was really very supportive, too?
Yeah, my teachers were extremely supportive of what had happened, and, you know, tried to keep my friends in check as much as they could. You know, rumors are still going to be spread, and there's not really any way to stop that. But to be able to have a good staff at school that you can talk to, a good guidance counselor, and good teachers that really take notice and things like bullying is really important. And unfortunately today it's really sad, and a lot of these schools, you know, teachers and guidance counselors will blow off a kid when they come up to them and say that something's wrong, and then, you know, by the time something really bad happens, it's too late.
I want you to hold your thoughts there, because I would like to address what teachers can do to be more effective and helpful, particularly during bullying. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. At the age of 14, Kaylin started giving motivational speeches and concerts to youth organizations, children's orphanages, and public school. She has never forgotten her time spent in the hospital, recovery, and the loneliness she felt laying there in the hospital, sometimes with no friends or visitors, coming for long periods of time. Kaylin has made it a priority to get out to hospitals and to see and meet and perform for as many as possible. Kaylin, you are a popular teen musician who's leaving an impression on the country music scene, but you're also leaving a bigger impression on the hearts of kids around the United States. And 411 Teen applauds you for that. I mean, you are truly phenomenal. Before we went on break, I was asking you about teachers and what role they played and what you think they could do as far as intervening with the whole bullying that occurs. Because so often you admit, and you've mentioned this, you know, teachers will be, well, it's just, you know, what kids do, they'll grow out of it, it'll be okay. But we find that bullying is much more vicious than people understand, and it has long-lasting psychological effects. So let's take a few minutes to talk a little bit more about bullying and suggestions you may offer to teachers or administrators or those in school.
Yeah, well, on the teacher side of things, it's really, really, really important to pay attention to each and every one of the students at school and how they behave, and to really listen to them when they have something to say. I've seen a lot of cases in schools around me, you know, high schools, where guidance counselors have kind of ignored or blown off something that a child has said to be threatening. And it goes unnoticed, and then something horrible happens, and then finally someone says something and makes a change. But why not make the change in schools before those bad things happen? And so I think that teachers just really need to be paying attention to the behavior of students and really listening to how they interact with each other and being involved in their life. Not much teachers as much as guidance counselors. I think guidance counselors really need to be involved a little bit in their personal lives and make sure, you know, everything is good at home. And if it's not good at home, that at least they can come to school and have a good life at school.
What role do you think ignorance plays when it comes to this bullying? I mean, for example, in your situation, if kids knew what happened, if it maybe had been addressed differently, and I don't know, but just giving them more information as to, you know, this was really an accident, an attack that happened, that maybe bullying would not be an option. Does that make sense to you?
Can you repeat the question again?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if you think that the role of ignorance with kids is significant and that they just don't know and they don't have an idea, for example, with you, of what you went through and what happened. And if they had an appreciation, even at a young age, you can explain almost anything to anyone, make this, as long as you make it age appropriate. If do you think that would have made a difference at all?
Yeah, I think it would have made a huge difference. I think that there needs to be more attention to bully prevention in schools. And again, that's something that I've been trying to do with this tour since I was 14, going to schools and even just educating kids on what it looks like to bully or to be a bully and to witness it and to be an upstander versus a bystander.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to educate kids, even at a very young age, to be upstanders and to recognize when someone is being bullied or recognize when they're bullying themselves. Because, you know, in middle school, I even found myself, you know, being mean to someone. And once you go up and you kind of look back and you're like, I had no idea that what I was doing was considered bullying and how much that the things that I was saying could affect other people and affect their lives. And so I think it's important for, you know, speakers like me to come in and to talk to these kids. Especially, the cool thing about the tour that I'm on is that all of the artists that are on it were 14 to 18. So we're around their age group, and they really listen and pay attention to what we have to say because we're around their age, like I said, and they really listen to what we have to say.
Do you feel that society overall is obsessed with perfection? That young teens are expected to just be perfect from their makeup to their nose to their body size? Do you think we're obsessed with it? You look on television and you have to be that perfect size, whatever, 3.
Yeah, I think that the social media has gotten a little out of hand when it comes to portraying people as being perfect, because none of us are perfect. And actually recently I've seen them do better. You know, there's some accounts on Instagram that there's this one, I forget what it's called, but it's 2 models, and one of the models is really skinny and then the other one is a little bit heavier set. And they're both very beautiful, and you know, the whole page is basically, look, we're 2 separate body types, 2 separate types of people, but we're both so beautiful. And I loved it when I see that. I wish I could remember the name of that page. But most of social media, other than a few of those pages, are extremely just putting so much pressure on mostly girls to look a certain way and act a certain way. And it's really sad to see social media taking over the lives of, you know, teens. And when I was in middle school, I didn't have Instagram yet. I had Facebook, but the amount of pressure on girls to look a certain way is not as harsh as it is now. You know, when I was in middle school, I didn't wear any makeup. I put my hair up in a ponytail, went to school, dressed however I wanted, and didn't really care too much about trying to look a certain way. But now with social media, I see these 7th graders and 6th graders even just, you know, taking on so much makeup and trying to hide who they are underneath all of it. And I think social media has had a huge kind of negative effect on the way girls perceive themselves.
Well, that's what I wondered, because we see social media and it's so pervasive and it plays such a significant role in the lives of teens today. How do you get around that? Suggestions? What do you do?
I honestly think that that's in the hands of parents. I think that parents need to really pay attention to what their kids see on social media nowadays. Of course, when I was younger, I wouldn't have been saying this, but now I myself realize like how bad it's gotten. And I think that social media needs to kind of create an age limit on certain things that people can see. These sixth graders and fifth grade girls are seeing pictures of girls in college or, 25-year-old girls that are doing things that they should not be doing. And they see that and they think that it's cool and that it's okay. And they're easily influenced by it. So I think that social media needs to be a little bit more strict. And if social media can't be strict, then the parents need to be in order to kind of protect their child's self-confidence.
Will you share one of your songs with us, a cappella?
Oh, well, I sing one of my songs
a
cappella. Let me think of one. I'll do this song that I wrote when I was 14 called Life in a Storm. All right.
Okay.
There's no need to be afraid. There's no need to want to cry. There's no reason you should be terrified. There's no need to hold back now. Use your voice and sing it out. You've got the strength to carry on.
Okay. Well, thank you. Very motivational, and that's how you connect. That's what I hear, how you connect with the teens. You know, just kind of inspiring them and telling them that you can do this. You know, it's your world, and you are in control of it.
Yes, absolutely. One of the tours that I go on is called the Royal Tour, and his name is Jay Ryan, the guy who came up with Royal. He's 17. He's an artist out of San Antonio. And what's so cool about it is Royal is an acronym that stands for Ruler of Your Own Life.
Okay.
And that's something that we love to preach to these kids at the schools, is that, you know, you control your own life. You're the director of your own movie, and you determine your future.
Okay. There seems to be, overall, in society today, a general indifference and insensitivity that you see in teens and young folks. Do you have any insight as to how we may increase sensitivity among those who don't have a clue, how we may connect with young folks and teens?
My advice goes out to parents.
Okay.
My parents have raised me to really recognize when I'm being mean to someone, or to feel emotion on a personal level, and to have that sensitivity and to have morals. And parents need to understand that their children are the next generation, and it's important to teach them to have those types of morals, to have that sensitivity, and to treat others the way that they want to be treated. And so my advice goes out to parents. And as kids, I think it's important to support each other and help each other out and teach each other.
Okay. As you look at yourself where you are today, in these last few minutes, what would you identify as the most difficult thing for you right now, today? And why do you see that as difficult?
Right now, the most difficult thing for me is trying to balance school and music.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a struggle. I have amazing teachers and tutors online and stuff that help me, but it's important to realize that you can follow a passion, but you also have to, you know, stay educated and always have a backup plan. And so it's really hard to balance the two for me personally. Being that it is my junior year, which is like the hardest year when it comes to schoolwork. And so, again, just my parents being able to support me and push me even when I don't like it. just to push me to be my best and work as hard as I can to achieve my goals. That really helps me out, and I really appreciate that.
What about time management? Do you find that you don't have enough time and that time management is helpful? And do you have any suggestions for those who may be in similar situations as to how to manage their time? Because it seems like you do it well.
Well, I get to take my school on the road because it is online, which definitely helps. Having my laptop on me all the time and making a few, even if it's just a few hours each time out of your day to focus on your education and learn something. You know, every day you should be learning something new. If you aren't, then it's a waste of day, and that's kind of what I live by. And when it comes to my personal time management, I can be bad at it, but my parents, again, they push me to, go the extra mile, stay up and do that one assignment, even though you're tired or you've done a lot with your music today. And so time management is extremely important when it comes to emotional health, because not only do I have to spend time on music and schoolwork, I also have to give myself time to take a mental break and spend time with friends. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some parents out there who support their kids so much and push their kids so much that they don't give them a mental break. And so that's extremely important for me. You know, if my parents get a little too pushy, I tell them, whoa, step back. You know, I need to take time to myself to hang out with friends or go see a movie or do something that mentally relaxes me so that you don't drive yourself insane.
So all work and no play is not good, is what you're saying.
Yes, that is absolutely not good at all.
A few words about virtual school. You said you are in virtual school, and what are the benefits for those who may be considering that? That may be a real option for them who are being torn in a number of different directions. What would you identify as the benefits or the positives of being involved in virtual school?
Well, with virtual school, if you choose the right one, now there are some that have, specific classes that you have to attend online through, like, FaceTime. But the one that I go to, they have due dates throughout the week. But you choose how you manage your time. You choose how you get your work in by that certain date. And it's extremely beneficial to have that ability because, with my music, I'm so busy and running around all the time that I can't go to a public school during the day for 7 hours. I have to do my music sometimes during the day. I have to travel to Nashville sometimes during the day. And it's really helpful when it comes to time management, especially for kids who have outside pursuits. And where I live, they opened up this new school called Crossroads Flex, which is a building that we all go to, the people who use the North Carolina Virtual Public Schools, we all go to this building, and we have tutors that help us stay on track. And it's amazing to see all of the different students that come to this school and how beneficial it is that they have this online school that they can take with them anywhere they go. I have one of the girls that goes to school with me is a U.S. Junior Olympic figure skater, and she's traveling all over the world to do competitions, and to have that ability to bring your school with you is just incredible.
Great. Well, Kaitlyn, thanks so much. I mean, we really appreciate you taking your time to share your experiences with us. I mean, it's been
Absolutely.
Just great.
Thank you for having me.
So, wishing you lots of peace and success in all your future endeavors. That's it. for this edition of 411 Teen. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your ear and time. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.